Whether it's a simple fight 'em up, a customizable role-playing game, or an open-world adventure, we finally live in a world of great superhero video games. And we're here to tell you which ones we think are the best because your geek history lesson is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Jason Power Up Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your Mind University because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or video game from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour, except this week because it's a list episode.
That's right. It's a list episode, but everybody loves our list episodes. And you might be saying to yourself, well, what is this list tying into in terms of SEO and pop culture? Well, my friends, there's a little movie out there called Sonic the Hedgehog 2. I know he's not a superhero, but he's appeared in superhero comic books.
I would argue he's a superhero.
Well, fair point. So that's our tie-in for the best superhero video games. Look, I know it's loosey-goosey, but just go with it. But I'll tell you someone who is not loosey-goosey. That's our guest. You know him for Tech Geek and Culture on YouTube. You've seen him on DC Daily. You've seen him as the host of this year's Consumer Electronics Show. You've seen his smile on Instagram. He is Brian Tong. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Woo, what an introduction, y'all. Oh my gosh.
Look, we have two generations of DC hosts here.
Oh, that is crazy. Oh, that is crazy.
We do. That is crazy. I didn't think about that.
Brian is a guest we wanted to have on for a long time, so we're super excited because if you've ever watched me play a video game on the internet, I'm terrible.
Yes. it's an honor to be here, guys. And the other thing is that, WonderCon happened, and that's, I think, where we actually, the three of us, first physically met for the first time in person. So I thought about that when I was there. We didn't see each other this year, which is fine, but that, you know, we are OGs and we're deep in this, and I'm so happy to be here. So thank you for having me, guys.
You're welcome. Brian, before we get to our list, I just want to ask, like, how much of a gamer are you, Brian? Do you get much time to sit down with the video games these days?
As the king of the tech internet.
Well, what's beautiful about this is when you guys threw the topic at me, because it's not like I say, oh, hey, let's do this. You guys are like, this is the topic. And I snap my finger, turn my head. I said, this is like riding a bicycle. If I haven't ridden it for 10 years, it's like the back of my hand. I still game, and superhero games are pretty much like, I've got to try them all. There's maybe one or two I haven't, and then, you know, you kind of have fun. You come up with your five, and let's be honest, you look at the internet to see what they're saying, and my top five are not necessarily aligned, but are within those top 10 of what other people are saying. So I felt pretty comfortable about my list, and I'm like, okay, let's do this, baby.
Interesting. So we might have a lot of doubles on this
one. We might.
All right. So everyone, as a reminder, if you want to hear more with Brian, we're going to chat about some of his favorite childhood video games over at patreon.com/Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N on our GHL Extra episode. So you can listen to that and four other monthly podcasts every single month. So we want to thank our super friends who support us over there. Now, to explain how this list is going to work, here are the rules. There are none. So if you can justify your choice as a superhero and a star as a superhero, it's on the list, man. We can do it. It's fine. This is because I saw some video games. I like Brian. I consulted lists and I saw some video games that weren't comic book superheroes, but I would classify them as a superhero video
game. Like Mega Man, for example.
See,
Mega Man could,
because I would say Mega Man is a superhero.
Hold on, I gotta change my list. Hold on.
That's what I'm saying. When you guys first introduced Sonic the Hedgehog as a superhero, I'm like, oh crap, my list needs to be changed right away.
I kept mine mainly to the comic book
superhero. I'm usually the one who will show up and be like, okay, this like doesn't count, but here is how I'm going to justify it. Yep. So I think most folks are hoping that we get at least one installation of Injustice on this list.
Ashley, she likes playing video games.
I'm just happy to be here.
Ashley starts and stops at Journey.
Yes.
Which is a beautiful video.
The only video game I've ever beaten.
Yeah. So Ashley's going to be our lovely MC today. Brian and I are going to be doing the list. These are our favorites, not our objective best. So relax in those comments. And I think, Brian, are you ready to power up?
Are you ready? Let's power up, baby. Okay. So, yes, this is an objective list. We got to always make sure the flames stay low. We're going to keep it warm here. Okay, I'm going to start with a little warm one. At number five for me, this is pretty much the name of this show. I put in Lego Marvel Super Heroes.
Ooh, I was wondering if a Lego game was going to make it onto this list.
It has the name Super Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
It is, mm-hmm. as someone who loves comics and, you know, the Marvel Universe, it was kind of the first one that exploded to kind of give the Lego comic book genre this full plate of like over 250 characters, different skins. It's multiplayer. It's fun. Even the fact that you basically only pound or mash three buttons, for some reason, you're still able to unlock and use like three or four powers per character. It's quirky. It's fun. And then, you know, how Lego always does like the weird, funny twists on actual storylines like they did with the Star Wars Legos. I had to put it. It's where we're getting warm. We're starting to heat things up. Lego Marvel Superheroes, number five for me.
Let me ask you this, Brian. When you play these Lego games, because they have those little, you call them pieces or widgets, where like each level has the pieces or widgets that you collect, yeah. And you can get to 100%. Do you 100% every level, or are you
impossible? That's impossible. It's also, I think when you come up with a game like this, the fact that I can play it with my nieces and nephews and like everyone's having fun. Now, that may not be the case with some of these other games on this list, but that has to be kind of part of the equation. This is a good like family fun game, and my nephews don't care about completing the Legos. They learned all these codes and, you know, to unlock different characters. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, just unlock them for me. I just want to play with them all.
Who are some of your favorite characters to play as?
Isn't it so generic to say Spider-Man, but isn't Spider-Man so fun to like web sling around in a game? No matter what it looks like, there's something about that that you can never kind of not love. I think also you got to go brute strength, because these games really have three buttons and you got to smash a lot of things. So you got to go Hulk smash too.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressing X. Pressing X. Like you're just constantly in Lego games pressing X.
Honestly, it sounds like a good game for me to be checking.
You know what?
You guys would love it. You guys would love it, honestly.
I think we might have played Lord of the Rings.
Play Lord of the Rings Lego. Yeah.
So there you go.
All right. Well, then, Jason, we're going to toss to you. What's your number five?
My number five is a game that I would watch the cinematics of. Mm. And it would always have this character in beautiful crimson and purple go, "You are helpless against my power, X-Men." I'm talking about the X-Men arcade game from 1982. Because everyone from your cousin to your little brother to your uncle, I think we all saw this in arcades and Walmarts everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that's where I saw it. I saw it in Walmarts. And it's a great game where you got to play as Cyclops, Colossus, mm-hmm. Wolverine, Storm, Nightcrawler, or even Dazzler.
Yeah.
In the game.
Yeah, dude.
You fight Sentinels, you fight the Blob, you fight the White Queen and Juggernaut. This is just one of those games that every time people talk about video games, this is another one, Brian, like anybody can play this game.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they've updated it a couple of times. This is also a game where you're just constantly pressing X. So like it doesn't take much skill to play it. Just like keep pressing X. How fast can I press X? Oh my God, Sentinels. But this is just one of those. I think this is the first superhero video game that I remember everybody talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody has at least played this game once if you're any type of a gamer. And the bar to entry is so good, but like it's such a good adaptation. Like the fact that they snuck the White Queen in there is fantastic. I mean,
also Dazzler, because it's just the scientific fact that men in the little boys who were little boys in the 80s and 90s love Dazzler. I don't know why. It's just the law.
Yes. Yes. But this is like one of those games that I think there will always be, even when we're at like PlayStation 10, there will always be an up-res version of this game in the PlayStation Network store somewhere or on Steam or somewhere. It's so infinitely enjoyable. It's a button mash game. Of course it is. But it was the first one I remember, and this is, you're going to see a lot about this in my list. It was the first one I remember where you actually felt like the superheroes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the trick to superhero video games. I think that's something the Lego games do very well too, mm-hmm. Is they make you really feel like said superhero, because the bad ones don't. Like the bad ones are the ones where they just reskin it over with Batman and you're just like, whatever.
This is also a game that every time we go to a retro arcade, we always play this game. Yep.
This one and The Simpsons.
Yeah, The Simpsons game and the TMNT game.
That's right.
Well,
go ahead, Brian.
You guys talk about the way that you're describing this game. instantly taps to the nostalgia that we have of physical arcade games, mm-hmm. meeting up with your friends or strangers, throwing up a quarter on the screen, being like, I'm next. And that is unfortunately kind of a lost art or a lost human interaction that we have today. And that was the only place for a time where you could play that game, whether it was your pizza place or whether it was the local arcade. You couldn't play that game anywhere else. And so the fact that it was a true meaning of a community game and the nostalgia of when video games were on their rise, I guess, was that game like an early 90s type game?
It was dated. It came out in 92. Okay. 1992.
There you go.
Wow. So it's an oldie.
It's an oldie, but a goodie.
Yep.
And right when you talked about it, I kind of felt it in my heart. I was like, damn, why didn't I put that on my list? And it reminds you of, like, right, there was the Avengers game. There was TMN, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Simpsons, X-Men. Those were those games during that time that you could play all four at one time if you really wanted to, because they all kind of had that theme of button mashing, work with friends, pay a lot for a little health, and you still kept on doing it.
Yeah, I knew from the beginning of this list that either Avengers or X-Men was going to make it on this. Yeah. And I chose X-Men simply for the fact of the machines where I would play, the Avengers, what joystick you picked was what character you were.
Yes.
Whereas like X-Men, you could just switch the characters. So like if you ever wanted to play White Vision, which was one of my favorites, you had to like take the joystick furthest on the side and you saw the screen at a catty corner and it just didn't really work. it made you lose the game. And I was like, but I want to be the robot.
It's going to shock listeners to learn that Jason wears glasses.
Yep.
Oh my God. Do you know offhand, you've heard of Arcade 1-Up that is bringing back all the retro games? Did they make an X-Men?
They did.
They did, right?
They did. But, you know, I will say this. I have never bought one of those because they're tiny. They're like half the size. So you have to like build a little thing to make them eye level.
Yeah. You have to put like their stand to put it on top. You know what? It's interesting. They've started to release a few games with a more fuller size arcade stand because like, it was already cramped back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
These arcade one-ups are extremely cramped. Like, we didn't get smaller as a people. So why it's hard.
Yeah.
I also like that you're both describing as if you would be building an arcade stand and not simply buying one off the internet. Like, that you two are like, we would just simply build a bigger arcade stand.
You could do the thing where you could just get the Raspberry Pi throw the emulators on there.
Yeah. Oh, who's the tech guy here now?
Yeah.
All right. That was a very strong number five. Two things that I didn't expect to hear. So Brian, blew my mind with your number four.
Ooh, I don't know. You know what? Okay. I already like Jason's list and where he's going. So
it's been one choice.
It doesn't matter. I'm already hyped. Okay. Number four. This is actually a game. Let's just spit it out. Marvel versus Capcom for Dreamcast.
Oh, yes, thank God you put that on there. That almost made my list.
Yeah, the reason why I put this game in is like there's very few games that involve superheroes that have this hardcore, quite honestly, like collector obsession behind it. This is a game that came out on Dreamcast. And today, if you wanted to get the game because it's so sought after, because they haven't released it yet on console, specifically Marvel versus Capcom 2. I had heard recently that they were going to. People are still buying this disc for somewhere around $150 or $200.
Wow.
And for that to happen, like for that longevity of a game on a console 20 plus years old that is no longer around, to me, that shows like the staying power. There's Marvel versus Capcom 3 that was really big in the competitive gaming scene. I went to Evo back in the day where it was just in like a single room in Vegas and wasn't in an arena. And people back then were still talking about Marvel versus Capcom 2. Mm. So,
and they've up-res this game, correct? Am I wrong about that?
I didn't check. But I remember they always did things with 3, but for some reason, I feel like they still haven't done 2. Someone's going to write in the comments. Okay. Brian,
I'm Googling it.
Yeah, please Google it for me, because I don't think 2 has been distributed digitally yet, but if I'm wrong, I totally accept
you
being
appear
wrong.
To be correct.
Ah, yes. Thank you.
As of last year, it is reportedly on its way.
Yes.
No source cited.
Yeah. There's rumors that they would be finally releasing it on digital sometime this year. People have been asking for it so much. So as a comic book reader and collector, and as you as also writers and comic book creators, that whole collectible idea of this genre that we're in kind of gives a little more weight. And so when you said superheroes, and I'm not, the funny thing is, like, my first two titles are Marvel based and we're both DC hosts.
Betrayers.
How dare you?
Mine are mostly Marvel too. I hate to say that, but it's true.
It's also because of the games that have come out. But yep. Marvel versus Capcom 2 for Dreamcast. And I have the copy still that I bought.
Do you still have a Dreamcast?
Yes, I do. I actually have a completely working Dreamcast.
Whoa!
We'll talk about some of those other games that we grew up with in the Patreon stuff. But Marvel versus Capcom 2 is number 4 on my list.
Great choice.
It's also one of the most, to this day, I think still the most beautiful, like, character intros that push down the line of everyone that you can. It's just much more theatric than just the grid, the Mario style grid.
My favorite move was playing War Machine.
And
he has the super move with this giant cannon that blasts the entire screen with blue energy. Like the entire screen, it's like Rhodey nukes the other person. And you just see the hits go up to like 57. Yeah.
And it was so over the top. Over the top. That's what I loved about
it. That's why it worked. That's why it worked.
You also just love Rhodey in like your day to day. All right, Jason, what is your number 4?
Well, let's keep it on a military train here. My number 4 is one that I think, a game that I think a lot of people have forgotten, but I also think, look, this is my vanity pick because I had a lot of fun playing this game and I think it was really good. I'm talking about The Punisher from 2004.
Oh my God.
Yep. It's a PlayStation 2, Xbox, Microsoft Windows game. Now, this was a video game that was released to tie into the Thomas Jane Punisher movie. And Thomas Jane voiced the Punisher in this game. Now, it's heavily influenced by the Marvel Knights Garth Ennis, Steve Dillon run. So Frank looks like he's black hair. And it's the game is all about basically, it's Frank Castle unleashing terror however you want. And it is very much like it would put you in an area and it would say, okay, you can just like shoot your way through this, or you can explore, or you can be stealthy, or you can interrogate literally everybody. Every character you meet, you could, there had a button where it was like quick kill, punch, or interrogate. And so like it really
what
changed.
What did interrogate do?
Well, so
just
so,
sit the guy down, bring him a water.
Well, so like basically he shakes the guy and punches him and is like, give me the information. And sometimes the guys would be like, I don't know nothing. And sometimes the guys would like give you bonuses. Like they would be like, the boss is in the back room. So you would know immediately where to go. Or sometimes they would give you like bonuses. But it would take a long time because you'd literally have to like shake these guys like bam, and you'd be like, I ain't telling you nothing. Shake them again, bam. I ain't telling you nothing. Shake them again, bam. All right, here's my wallet. You know. So the great thing about it, and this is the reason why I remember this game to this day, is that the cherry on top is that every single room or area had a thing called a hotspot. Now, what that was is that if you could grab somebody and you could take them over to the hotspot, and the hotspot would be a basically gruesome way to kill your enemy, like Garth Ennis Punisher style. And here, I went and looked up because I forgot like what some of these were. Here are what some of the hotspots did.
Oh boy.
Okay. You could throw someone into the air onto a sconce that would stick to their chest. You could smash someone in the gears of a factory.
You
could kill someone with a nail gun, like a machine gun. And I think the best one is there's a zoo level.
And here we go.
Two of them is you could put somebody's head into the piranha pool and the piranhas would eat them. And then the other one is you would kick somebody into the bear cage and the bear would eat them.
Wow.
Eep, eep, eep.
So I know they wouldn't release a game like this, and I also 100% believe that this game would not stand up to the test of time, but it's like, it is my vanity pick, specifically because that Marvel Knights run is full of so much over-the-top, gruesome stuff, and I can't believe they sort of captured it in this video game, but I feel this is a video game that, like, not a lot of people give credit to, and I think it definitely influenced like some of the open world stuff in some of the later like Batman and Spider-Man games. But The Punisher 2004 is my number 4.
Wow. I did not expect a Punisher game on either of your lists, to be completely honest. So I'm blown away. Brian,
that,
we're at
that
number
is
3.
Incredible. Okay, before I get a three, that is an incredible pick because, you know, I was trying to, that's one of the few games I never played. And to hear the mechanics in a Punisher game like that, I think there's a lot of spirit that if they brought that back today with the graphics and the technology they have today, I think it'd be there's a lot of stuff there that I think works actually.
I think there would be except there's one level I wouldn't bring back. If I remember correctly, there is a Vietnam flashback level.
Yeah.
I did not bring that level back.
Wow. But that's an incredible one. I did not expect
that. I agree. I think if you did it correctly, I think that would be a game that would like capture a lot of people.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, here we go, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we had one fighting game, Marvel vs. Capcom 2. There is no way I can leave this game off my list. At number three, Injustice 2.
Yeah.
From NetherRealm Studio.
I knew one of the Injustices was going to be on this.
Brian.
Yeah. What?
Injustice 2 is my number three as well.
Oh! I love that. I mean, I bet you our 2 and 1 might be the same too.
This is only the third time in Geek History Lesson history where we have had people pick the same number, the same choice at the same number.
Yes.
What an honor.
So, Brian, why did this make your number three? Let's hear it and then I'll go.
Yeah, I think you and I can talk about a lot about this. Okay, Injustice, the first one really was like set the stage. NetherRealm had only done Mortal Kombat. They had the WB license, and all of a sudden we're finally seeing DC heroes in a fighting game. Now, you know, Marvel, Capcom, and part of why we had a lot of Marvel titles on our list, and we talked about it, when you look at all the games that are out there, they had a lot more aggressive licensing and they had a lot more video game titles. Whether they failed or succeeded, that's who cares about that. But Marvel just had a lot more of games with their characters. And there's also still this idea of, oh, comic book character adaptations not doing so well. You put DC in the fighting game for the very first time. Now, I do want to shout out honorable mention to Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe.
Mm-hmm. I played that one.
Which I loved because I'm a Mortal Kombat
bad.
Guy.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. I mean,
I wrote a Mortal Kombat trivia game for trivia that's questions right, for Brian right. And definitely put a Street Fighter question in it.
That's
but you
right.
still got it right.
Thank goodness. But Injustice 2, the reason why, just overall the franchise, Injustice 2 improved on Injustice. They had all these great, like, clash and super moves. And if Aquaman is feeding you to a shark that jumps out of the water for no reason, even if you're in a warehouse, that automatically gets bonus points for me. But they made a comic book. They made an animated movie based on the success and the existence of this game. I don't think that's ever happened before, from what I recall.
I don't know if I can 100% say that, but you're well said that they brought up the comic book because the Tom Taylor Injustice tie-in comic book is amazing, and he did the comic book in between Injustice 1 and Injustice 2.
That's right.
And then I remember because I was that's when I was doing interviews about this for DC, and they said the video game developers said that they liked the Tom Taylor comic book so much that they basically were like, it's canon and we're taking elements from it.
I wrote an article
for DC Comics where I called the Injustice comic books the best Elseworlds story that they ever published.
You know, it's funny, Brian, the reason why it made my number three is because, like, I'm not a huge fan of fighting games. Mm. And I can remember playing Injustice 1 and then it got improved in Injustice 2 that I thought the story was so good that it incorporated the fighting levels so well, like you almost forgot it was a fighting game because like it was so well incorporated into the story. And then like Injustice 2 went crazy with the DLC characters that I almost feel like you get to play the like Darkseid is a playable character. Black Manta is a playable character. Red Hood, Nightwing, Starfire.
Okay. Now we need to know. And I asked Brian this for a previous question. Who do you both like playing as when you play Injustice?
Ooh.
Mm. Well, you heard about my Aquaman throwdown. I mean, I've always loved Aquaman. I actually really love Solomon Grundy from the first Injustice because like he had a special move where like you could throw a guy in four different ways and he's like born on a Sunday, you know, and he did the whole his whole like chant as with each slam. It was incredible. Then he tombstoned your head. But who do I play with in Injustice 2? Mostly I played with Aquaman and Flash, because Flash does this crazy move where he like runs around the world really fast, and then he goes back into time at prehistoric ages, and then like slams you into a dinosaur. Like, just stupid awesome comic book stuff. So Flash and Aquaman were my two guys.
Aquaman
that I played.
Drops a shark on you, right?
He like feeds you to a shark.
Yeah, that's right. You to a shark. Yeah. The super moves is like another thing. Like my favorite super move, I would play as Superman a lot, because Superman punches you into orbit and then he punches you back down to the ground.
Yeah.
But the two characters I would play the most are Nightwing, because I love playing with his Screamo sticks. Mm-hmm. And then I actually had a lot of fun with Green Arrow.
Green Arrow is my other guy. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
And so I can't remember, his super move is something like he slides down on an arrow and like kicks you in the face or something like that, I believe.
He does like a slide, and I think he shoots an arrow behind you that becomes like a booby trap bomb. And after he slides you, you kind of fall back and you hit like the bomb. And does he like wrap you up a few more times there? I mean, there's a lot
I'm
of
not
stuff.
Certain. Yeah, I know everybody's screaming.
Someone is screaming at their phone,
I do know that, I think if I remember right, like one of the Batman super moves is he like grabs you by the collar, hops in the Batmobile, and drags you down the street.
I feel like that might have been the first one. I think that was the first one, but I think you're right.
Yeah, there's another one where the Batmobile like comes into the level and runs you over.
I do remember, not to wade into too much of this territory, but when the Injustice games came out, they sort of bracketed some versions of the Justice League movie, and finding it interesting around the discourse of these superheroes are too violent, and then everyone loved Injustice where you're just beating the absolute snot out of each other.
But the other thing is, they added the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to this game.
Were like, Stephen Amell played one, it's close enough.
I mean, Hellboy is in this game.
Yes.
Did they add Spawn to this?
Spawn's in Mortal Kombat.
That's right.
But they added like Darkseid, Hellboy, Raiden from Mortal Kombat.
That's right.
They always do Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
But no, I agree with you, man. Like, this game is, and that's why I'm so happy that they're making a third, because I mean, I think this is the game that blew up. Everybody played this game, as far as I can remember. It seemed like everybody played this game anyways when it came out.
Yeah, you know,
even I've played this game.
Yeah. The thing that I really loved hearing about how you enjoyed this game is, so NetherRealm Studios, I happen to have some, you know, nice friends over there, but like they really focus on the story, right? And Mortal Kombat, kind of where Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat differentiated themselves back in the day, was that Mortal Kombat had this huge lore that we know about and huge in-depth story. And so they took those skills and brought them to Injustice. And to your point, the storytelling is so amazing, and it actually makes sense. Like I remember when DC Universe versus Mortal Kombat came out, it was like, oh, magic allows DC characters that are humans to fight Superman. And people are like, I don't know about that one. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, people are like, yes, I get it. It's like either kryptonite or maybe magic. Okay, fine. But here with the Injustice story of like this Elseworlds, and you have different factions, and you see heroes on different sides, one for order, one for, I don't necessarily say chaos, but the anti-establishment. And, you know, and Superman represents like the order. Oh, come on. This whole thing is juicy. And I think anyone who hasn't played this, like Jason said, play it for the story. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say that I'm not the best at fighting games, and set it on easy. And it's only about like until like halfway through that it starts becoming, I found it becomes really challenging. And then you just have to like kind of like pay attention and get a little better. But I was able to beat this game, and I'm not good at fighting games. So like that should give everybody hope.
And it's hard, because like fighting games is like you got to learn combos to basically advance, and like some people don't want to do that. Now I'm a big fighting game person, but I get it. Like, so I just love the fact that you said the story was so good that you're like, I'm gonna get through this. But Injustice, like the impact of this game and beyond video games, like the fact that you said, right, you know, Tom Taylor, I do believe like the initial story or the seeds were from the NetherRealm studio, and then Tom Taylor picked it up, and then they kind of went back where, okay, then Injustice said, oh, we love what Tom Taylor's doing, we're going to bring some of that roster and elements into our next game. So
I also could be wrong. Sorry to interrupt you, Brian.
No, you're good. You're good.
I also could be wrong that I think Jimmy Palmiotti might have wrote on the original game before the comic as well.
He was, I believe you're right, he was part of the team that advised that storyline, because they did kind of mention that having a comic book writer, like, you know, just the way helped. That the brain works and the thinking of it, and to build that story and the lore and understand.
And the cool thing is, Injustice 2 has two different endings.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you can choose whether you want the good guy ending or the bad guy ending. And I think that's kind of, I always love when games do that.
Well, and particularly in superhero logic and in video game logic, it is black and white ethics. So there is very much, this is the good ending, this is the bad ending. We're not doing any Breaking Bad style storytelling.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting, again, since we're both excited. We're both big fans of Injustice 2, to see which one they choose for Injustice 3. Like, which one do they say
is the ending? Canon ending. Yeah.
Very true.
All right. Now, everybody, before we get to our number twos, let's listen to this.
All right, Brian, as our guest of honor, I'm going to ask you your number two and see if Jason decides to agree with you.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay. So I kind of made this a 2A and a 2B.
Interesting.
But 2A has to be Spider-Man from Insomniac Games, and 2B would be the Miles Morales extended for it. So I'm saying the Spider-Man Insomniac franchise, that is number two. Do I hear a siren or a whistle or whatever it is?
And here's the crazy thing, Brian.
You were also going to justify how both of them were the same.
Yes!
Because it was a DLC.
I put in here, I was like, I don't count the Miles Morales as a separate game. I count it as the same one.
So good.
When you brought up Spider-Man earlier, you were like, who doesn't want to play a Spider-Man? I was going to be like, yeah, like the other. And I was like, don't say it, because it's going to be on someone's list.
Oh, this is incredible. Okay, this is going down, because I got to imagine number one's going to be the same.
It's going to be either
that, or we're going to come to fisticuffs.
It's going to be the same, or it's going to be part of the same franchise. It'll be
interesting. Yeah. For sure.
Why did Spider-Man PS4 make your number two, man?
Oh my goodness. That game kind of unlocked, look, let's be honest, it might have taken elements from the Arkham franchise and incorporated it to how Spidey lives and breathes in this world, but that's what made it amazing. Spider-Man Insomniac, the story, the visuals, the characterizations, I loved every bit of it, and it's one of the first games, actually, you know, it was in like the 2000s. I think there was like a PlayStation Spider-Man game or a Super Nintendo game? It was I can't remember. Sorry, go ahead.
There's like three previous Spider-Man games that this game is like kind of pulling from. There's a PS1 and Nintendo 64 Spider-Man game that's based on the cartoon, and it's sort of like when you're on the levels, there's a haze. You can't see the streets.
That's right.
But you web swing to the buildings. There is the Spider-Man 2 based on the movie. And that was the first video game that let you go anywhere in New York.
Yeah.
And so it was like open world, like Grand Theft Auto. And then there's an Ultimate Spider-Man game that kind of came out in 2006. That's sort of like based on the Ultimate Spider-Man comic book series. And it's also open world, but it's very cel shaded. And I actually really like that one. But yeah, it's like taking all those elements of those previous Spider-Man games and then sort of perfecting them.
Yeah. And also I think the biggest limitation for those games is just the technology that was available.
Yes.
How big levels they could make, how to really fine tune these mechanics, like the web slinging mechanics, whether you're navigating, traversing, climbing. I mean, you're in freaking New York City. It's modeled after New York City. It feels, this is one of the very few games. In fact, if I had to say out of all the superhero games, you feel like the character more than any other game in Spider-Man, because it is gorgeous. And it was really hard for me to be like, is there really anything wrong with this game? And the answer to me is no. But Insomniac did a great job of also, you know, paying respect and putting in Easter eggs. I love how these more as comic book superhero games have evolved, they really pay attention to the lore and they reference a lot of things. They might put an Easter egg in a mini mission, but you feel like, okay, this team cared about the content. They talked to people from Marvel or DC, and they made sure that people who actually read comics, who are like where this all started, feel like they're listening to them and they're showing them love as well. Because I think that's important.
The suit is also really beautiful. The performance on Peter Parker is incredible.
Yuri Lowenthal.
And Mary Jane gets to do stuff.
Yeah, there's a Mary Jane level. I remember I showed the Mary Jane level to Ashley. Yeah. I was like, I can't believe there's a Mary Jane level.
Yes.
Brian, real quick, what suit did you play the most as?
There was two. I mean, I played as the main suit just because I wanted to, like, I didn't go with classic. I just wanted that the one that has kind of the white highlights, the modern suit that is for the game. I just felt like I wanted to be that version, but I also played a lot with the Avengers armor, the Infinity, the Spider, the Iron, not Iron Spider per se, but the movie adaptation of Iron Spider. I love that from Infinity Saga. And then did I play with any other ones really? I just always wanted to get the biggest combos. So that's what I played with specifically.
Oh, nice. I was always either Scarlet Spider or I was Spider-Man Big Time, because that suit was the classic suit, but it was metallic. So it looked interesting at night, like it would reflect,
which I thought
was really cool. You know, if I were to give this game any negative, I never enjoyed the chasing the pigeons games, the little spy missions.
Oh, I hate
that. We get to chase these guys' pigeons, and I was like, I don't care about these pigeons. But no, Brian, you nailed it, because this game makes you feel like Spider-Man. This game could just be web-slinging the game, and you would have so much fun. Mm-hmm. There was so much time where I would just web-swing around.
Yep.
And like just try out moves, because that was fun enough. That was more fun than some of the side missions. But yeah, you're right, like saving the cat, and then that was such a fun mission. And then like, yeah, you're talking about the Easter eggs, making the photograph little side missions, and all the photographs are Marvel Comics Easter eggs. Like you have to photograph the sign of Murdoch and Nelson, and you have to photograph Avengers Tower, and you have to photograph, you know, like something that's, I think it's like the Fantastic Four, or, you know, it's all these like little things. And I'm calling it now. I think this video game is, to me, the setup that we will see Mr. Negative in a movie.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, that's so great.
I think because that's this so game great. Was so popular. And by the way,
this is my favorite design of that character, too.
Oh, he's a great character. He's a great character. And as soon as this video game exploded, I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to see Mr. Negative in like a movie pretty soon. Mm. You know, kind of like when Deathstroke showed up in one of the Batman games. Yeah. And boom, he was like everywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this game, it's funny because their Spider-Man games and superhero video games have been a mixed bag for so long.
Absolutely.
And I think everybody was skeptical of this game. Like, everyone was like, I don't know, is this going to work? And then I remember within 5 minutes, I was like, this game is amazing.
It literally, like, it's hard. It sounds silly, but no, it doesn't sound silly, because we love this stuff. Like, there was an actual, like, emotional kind of physical response to actually swinging through New York with Spider-Man. You're like, oh my God. There's a team of, you know, 50 to 100 people that are working on all these little nuances just so we can feel that. And it's really hard to say. That's why I kind of said I arguably feel this is the game that made me feel the most like a character has ever made me feel, like, because of that kind of emotional feeling.
Yeah, I agree. And then also, listeners, if you ever played this game and you haven't just let Spider-Man just stand on the street for 5 minutes to watch people's reaction to him and see what Spider-Man does.
Hey, Spider-Man!
I highly recommend it, because some of the stuff they got Yuri Lowenthal to record while he's just bored and standing there is very funny.
Yeah.
Is there anything specific to the Miles level or the Miles expansion that built on some of the stuff from the original game that, like, really stood out to either of you?
Well, I loved how they kind of passed the baton in the storyline to Miles. And the thing is that
Pete goes to Europe.
Yeah.
I'm going to Europe. Here you go, Miles.
I'm
going to
go be in the second Spider-Man MCU movie. Yeah, so exactly. You're going to New York.
But like even the whole Miles Morales storyline, I mean, of course, it's all the mechanics. He, quite honestly, my only criticism of the Miles Morales story version is that he's too OP. He's so powerful. Like, he can be invisible. His Venom Blast pretty much, like, takes everyone off the board. Like, it doesn't feel difficult. The story is amazing. You know, the character building is amazing, but he, as an actual playable character, he's too powerful. So I never felt, it was like, oh, Peter Parker, that Spider-Man, Miles Morales was like Spider-Man times 10 on steroids.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like, just the giving him like one more ability than Spider-Man with the Venom Blast. Yeah, you're right. Like, it makes him more powerful than Peter.
Super powerful.
But I will say,
honestly, I love that for Miles.
Yeah, it's fine. the great thing about it is it made the fighting mechanics much different because for me, I'm kind of like Brian. Like, when I was Spider-Man, Peter Parker, I would just use my fists a lot. Mm-hmm. But with Miles, I use the Venom Blast stuff a lot.
Because it's like a length weapon, right? Keeps people away from you.
It's able to like push enemies further away from you.
It's like charges his body every time you hit it. Just like, and it's like there's this, you know, kind of like yellow lightning power up effect with every hit he throws and everything like that.
But a thing that also makes the Miles thing distinct is they really jazzed up the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They gave it a very like R&B flavor.
Yep.
So it sounds different than Peter Parker.
Totally. And even go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah, it's fine.
Even how Miles swings around, his body motions, like how fluid he is, it's just a lot. I don't want to, it feels more organic the way he moves. It feels like someone who hasn't really figured it all out, the way his legs kind of dangle and and flay out while he's doing flips and web slinging. It's Spider-Man is really controlled and refined and like, oh, he's got this. Miles Morales doesn't feel like that, really. So they really paid attention to a lot of details that made it feel different enough. And of course, like, the mechanics are amazing, but it's not a bad game by any means. It's just that like Spider-Man of the two has to be the one in number two.
The biggest problem with it is that it's so short.
Yeah.
Is that it's so short. And what you're talking about, your web swinging for Miles, one of the things that I think the game does so geniusly is that there are like 3 to 4 Peter Parker training sims that Peter has like set up for Miles. And every time, and they're hard. And every time you do each one, it unlocks a move for Miles so that over the course of this very short game, you see Miles get better at web swinging, or you can get better with Miles because you've unlocked an ability that you didn't have before.
Yeah.
Because you didn't know how to do it.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, and also, you know, from a pure gamer marketing economics, I mean, the PS5 came out and this was the game that everyone played when they first had a PS5, if they were able to get a PS5.
I still
they
not also able a, to get a PS5.
Yeah, right. They had a it's still not easy.
Yeah, I know.
They had the PS4 version, but the whole idea was like, oh, the fidelity of the PS5. The game looks great no matter whether you play it on a PS4 or a PS5. But it was kind of one of those hooks for that first 3 or 4 months. There was no other game that really distinguished itself as I've got to get a PS5 if I can find it. Spider-Man Miles Morales was that game. So that was part of it, too.
Let's one last final thing on Spider-Man before we move on. Brian. Yeah. Do you prefer the face of Peter Parker from the original game, or do you prefer the face of the up-res Peter Parker? Because I don't know if you know this, Ashley. So when they up-resed it to PS5.
Oh, I've seen it.
Yeah. So when they up-resed it, they made Peter Parker kind of basically look like Tom Holland.
Yeah.
And he looks weird.
Yeah, it looks like it's not quite this bad, but it reminded me of in the GoldenEye video game where it was just the head wrapped around a cone, kind of. Because it's definitely not that bad, but there's an uncanny valley.
I prefer the original face. How about you, Brian?
100%. I'm on board with that. I didn't understand. They never really explained enough of the motivations of like why. And they kind of said, oh, you know, it's the way his face moves is better. I didn't think it did. And
I think it was a call from Disney, as I think there's
right. But then also the style of it, because it looked like Tom Holland, it actually felt out of place in the overall art direction and how other people's faces look like the way that Miles' face looked. The Tom Holland face felt out of place to that world because it looked almost like too Tom Hollandish instead of video game. I don't want to say like hand sketched, but because it was more than that, it just felt different. So it just felt out of place.
All right.
Okay.
We're here, Ashley.
Okay, Brian. Yeah. What are your and Jason's number one pick?
I've been starting this off the first time each time. I would like to have our co-host Jason tell us what his number one is first.
Oh, okay.
I think we all know what franchise this is.
But if we were not doing this through the magic of the internet, I tried to have you both say it at the same time.
Yes, true. mine is Batman Arkham City. That's my number one.
Okay. This is I chose I was like, does this count? I said the entire Arkham trilogy.
Absolutely.
But of the three, mine was also Arkham City. Let me hear the siren.
Woo! We'll allow it. It's again, it's hard.
Well, it's all one story.
It's
right?
hard to separate them. But yeah. I picked Arkham City because I agree, like with Beautiful. You, it's the best of the three. I mean, because you have Arkham Asylum, you're locked in one location. Yep. Arkham City, you get to go across Gotham. And then Arkham Knight, like the story is really good. The graphics are really good. You get to play as Nightwing, but there's just way too many damn Batmobile missions. so you get kind of like, so you're just like, ah, oh, I wish you would have just made this like Arkham. Because like the thing you want in Arkham City the entire time, you're going around the city and you're just like, man, I want to drive the car, but they won't let you drive the car. and then I think the producers of the games overcorrected too much where they're like, you're gonna drive the car all the time. But like it's Kevin Conroy voicing Batman, it's Mark Hamill voicing the Joker. It is some of the best versions of the Rogues Gallery all over the place. I am 100% convinced that searching for the Riddler trophies all throughout this game is exactly what inspired the Riddler in the new The Batman.
Ooh, nice.
Also, this is the first video game that I can remember, as far as I know, that you got to play as Nightwing. And that's a big plus for me. But I think the thing that makes this game stand out is the combat.
Absolutely.
Because it has such an amazing combat system that, you, as you said earlier, you can tell that Spider-Man PS4 like based their combat system or looked at this because it's very similar. But the fact, I remember the first time playing the combat in Arkham Asylum, and it improves with every game, is it's the first time I felt like, oh, one person like Batman could take on 50 guys and actually do it. Because the game like teaches you how to do it, and it rewards you for like timing your combos right, and then it punishes you for like not for screwing up. It's just fan. I mean, how do you feel about Brian? What do you think like stands out from the Arkham trilogy and specifically Arkham City?
So like I wanted you to talk about it for 5 minutes more because I was literally nodding my head and smiling like, yes, yes, like for real. So the combat system, you know, no one had ever cracked the nut of how to make combat situations for in kind of like large scale group gang up battles really work. You literally could, based on timing, only use two buttons. You could use just the strike button and the dodge button. And if you time it right, be able to take out all these people. So it was super simple, but it's also really complex based on the timing. Also, yes, you could do a few other moves in there that really mix it up, grab people with your, you know, with the bat gun and throw batarangs and all those things. But the combat is what made Arkham Asylum so great. And everyone's like, oh, damn, I feel like Batman playing this. And then the reason why you gotta go Arkham City is because you finally got to explore a city. You got to glide in the city because, like you said, Arkham Asylum, you were a detective. You were in Arkham Asylum. That feels like you're just hanging out. There's nothing wrong about it. It was
spent
incredible.
A lot of time in hallways.
In hallways and air vents. Yeah, a lot. I love the fact that they also gave the ability and kind of improved it more and made it more, or at least like prioritize more the fact that you could either go hardcore combat or stealth. Like in Asylum, it tended to lean more towards combat. It did have stealth, but just not as much. And in Arkham City, you had stealth. So you had those elements. And then you have Catwoman in Arkham City. So you get to play in this huge sandbox. Finally, really, you know, GTA at the time was the standard for open world games. And now you really got to feel like, okay, this is Batman meets GTA open world openness with Batman mechanics and gliding. Oh, come on. It's incredible. It's incredible.
There's a level in this game. And I won't say where it is because I don't want to give any spoilers away because you can still play the up-res versions of this. But there's a level where you're fighting Ra's al Ghul and you fall out a window with them. And the fight continues.
As you're falling. Oh, that's cool.
And it's the first time, I remember when I played this, it blew my mind as a comic book fan. It blew my mind as a video game fan. And I remember that's the exact moment where I said, this is the best video game of all time. Like, this is just, I cannot believe that this is a level. in this game, and it's so good.
And that does feel very uniquely Batman. So kind of going like Brian, I feel like Brian's theme has been all around the stories of it. And that, I think that's like a really intelligent choice coming from that same POV.
Yeah. Well, wow. The top three. I mean, I think that just makes it official. We agreed in the top three. Those are legitimately the top three.
Here's the question now. What did you order, though? I know you said Arkham City, but if you had to order the three Arkham games, I mean, the three core games, because there were kind of like some side ones from Montreal Studios.
Look, Arkham Origins, not terrible, but I don't include it in this list.
Yeah, correct. I don't either. So we have Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, and Arkham Knight. How do you order those three games for yourself? Because I want another Siren, basically.
I mean, for me, I think I have to go Arkham City. I think you have to go Arkham Knight because it's just the story is so damn good. And then it's Arkham Asylum only because they improved everything from Arkham Asylum. So that's why it's third.
Yeah. I mean, this is one moment where we won't get the siren. I had Arkham City and then Arkham Asylum because what it did for the genre of superhero games, like Arkham Knight, I even wrote this in my notes. Arkham Knight is the most polished version of the whole Arkham trilogy.
Yes.
But to your point, they fell in love with the Batmobile.
I cannot believe it.
Like, and as a tank, right? I think
if
there were more like cruising through the streets, that's different than
race missions. They were all like use the 50 caliber on top of the Batmobile and just shoot things.
Exactly. And dodge and like you're a tank. And I'm like, it's not I don't need to be a purist and be that guy, but it's not really a tank per se. That's probably more of like the modern adaptation of seeing how, you know, the Batmobile was portrayed in the movies recently. But I think like I had to give Arkham Asylum because at that time there was a lot of people have to remember in video games, again, there was no really successful, like groundbreaking superhero game, and people had for the most part kind of given up on like, oh, no one's gonna be able to do a superhero game, right? And then once Arkham Asylum came out, people said this is the game that has kind of broken that mold. And then obviously it had the next versions. And then Spider-Man, you know, not overthinking it, but making it unique to their character, took a lot of what happens in Arkham Asylum and incorporated it into their game with Spider-Man mechanics. So it really kind of is the standard for what a superhero game was and broke the mold of everyone being disappointed by like, there was like a Wolverine, like I think it was like an X-Men Origins game, and there's a
it's not bad. Mark Hamill voices Wolverine in that game.
Oh, I didn't know he was the voice of that game.
Yeah, it's Mark Hamill.
I had no idea. His voice.
It's an okay, and there's a Deadpool game that's kind of okay. Yeah,
there's kind of okay.
That's so interesting. You know, Brian, going off your point about putting Arkham Asylum a second, Arkham Asylum is the one because before that, Batman video games had bad reputations because there were also a couple of Batman animated games that tied into the Bruce Timm series.
Yeah.
And they're kind of not great.
Because the Batman Telltale game is after
Asylum. Yeah. And that one's pretty good.
Great.
The Telltale games were pretty great.
Arkham Asylum, you're right, is the one that broke the streak of Batman. Because I remember pre-Arkham Asylum, everybody was kind of like the Spider-Man game was like, there's no way this is good. Mm-hmm. This is going to be trash. And it blew everybody's mind. Now, the golden goose to me, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this, Brian, the golden goose is a Superman video game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't know. There's been so many rumors of the studio that has done the Arkham series. You know,
is it Rocksteady?
Correct. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's that there's even been evidence of like, you know, leaked like images or files of the past that they had worked on a Superman game, but it doesn't sound like it's coming to light anytime soon.
I don't know. Yeah, there's enough, but you don't know whether you're like, oh, is that like previs stuff for your Suicide Squad game that's coming out next year?
Correct.
Have they attempted a Superman game and then be like, it's because it is a difficult.
It's a different beast.
It's a different beast because I think we all know the horror stories of Superman 64, one of the worst video games of all time. Fly through the rings and get your heat vision. Whoa, God. but there is a video game that PlayStation 2 put out that was tied into Superman Returns, and it was not bad. It was an open world game where you flew around as Superman, and the only problem with it was that you had to keep fighting robots because I think Metallo was like the big villain, and it got real boring. Got real boring real quick, but it was cool that you got to fly around the city with heat vision and freeze. You had all your powers like right out the gate.
Yeah.
I've said this in several different places, but like whoever cracks the egg on Superman video games, please, please, please have a side mission where you turn into Bizarro and all you do is smash.
That would be amazing.
Your goal is to create as much damage as you can,
which you will then clean up as Superman in the next level. Yeah,
in the next level, like you and Jimmy Olsen or Star Labs, like, oh man, get out the brooms.
You know, I do want to say one thing also with the Arkham series that I got to give credit to Rockstar. Sure. Like their name didn't. Well, I thank you for saying their name because it reminded me again. They did a really good job of making a Batman as a detective as well.
Yes,
you know, solving these puzzles and the puzzles. A lot of times, like it's a really fine line in a lot of these games in general to come up with puzzles that are smart enough, that are complicated enough, but not too complicated, but not too dumb. And I think they really hit the mark on all the puzzles that they put within the game in regards to that. The Riddler challenges in Arkham Knight, those were amazing as well. But just that whole studio, the way that they think and the way that they've really embodied the DNA of Batman in their games has been incredible. Like I said, Spider-Man made me feel like the character, but Batman made me feel like it was the best representation of a comic book character, if that makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. It does make sense. It is generally a scary and mysterious game, which I think is well done. Mm-hmm. All right, well, listeners, there's our list. And if you want to get some more information, maybe some cheat guides, whatever, you can go over to our recommended reading. Where is that, Ashley?
That is at geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. We have great little widgets there. You click on them, you buy whatever interests you, you steal some money out of Daddy Bezos's pockets, and you put it back in ours.
There you go. So it's all related to, so it's going to be a lot of Batman. It's going to be a lot of Spider-Man. It's going to be a lot of Injustice. Brian, what a great list. Thank you so much for joining us. Please tell our listeners where they can find you and if you got any cool projects or anything they should keep an eye out for.
Oh, man, this is so fun. I love doing this with y'all. So people can find out and watch my content at youtube.com/Brian Tong. Just my name, Briantong. And just do a lot of things of like, you know, whether it's an iPhone review or Samsung review. I just did a recently cool segment because I've been fortunate enough to sometimes link up with some of the people behind the scenes. Disney Studios, they gave me a really in-depth. And I mean, if you really want to nerd and geek out about this stuff, it's about a 30-minute interview with the team from Raya and the Last Dragon about how they created all new iTech specifically for that movie, because it really had a lot of focus on the faces of the characters versus like wide shots, or they really wanted to lean into the faces. So, I mean, if you like that nitty gritty, like how they make the movies with technology and geek, I mean, that's like that sweet spot. I did something like that. And in general, you kind of just hang out. If you like my stuff, cool. If you don't, that's cool too. But come and check it out.
I thought Brian was going to mention that really cool video that he had putting up those sweet new cameras around his house, which one, the cameras are great. And then two, you get to admire Brian's house. Yeah, yes, Brian, I watched that video.
I mean, I didn't assume you did, but yeah. Hey, you guys are welcome to come over. I mean, I got to throw a barbecue or something eventually, right?
Let us know. You let us
know. Would love to do it.
All right. Well, thank you, Brian, again, for coming by. And everybody listening, thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and listen to this podcast on Spotify, everywhere you put podcasts in your ear holes. Ashley, you can find her on Instagram and Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N. And don't forget, we're going to have a little bit more with Brian at patreon.com/Jawin. Now for hashtag stick around, or it's our final segment where we make sure you stuck through all the plugs. Round robin, quick answer, Brian, no thoughts. I'm going to ask you a question. Give me your immediate choice. What's your favorite video game? Excuse me. What's your favorite video game console of all time?
Has to be the Dreamcast. The most unique, quirkiest console that we've ever seen. And the first to have internet play over SegaNet with a phone line.
SegaNet. Oh, boy. Ashley, do you have an answer for this question?
My favorite console?
Yeah.
N64.
Same. I love that little joystick. I love that controller. I know a lot of people hate that controller, but I love that stupid controller.
Yeah. or maybe the Super Nintendo, because that's the one that when we were really little, my cousins had, and we would go over, and if they took pity on us, we could play on the Super Nintendo.
But really, really good breadth of games. All right. Well, Brian, thanks again for joining us. Everyone out there, thank you again for listening to this. This has been Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Smash That X Button Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
Game over.